Hello and welcome to Escape into Storytelling. I'm Jennifer Bradley and this is a chapter from my self-published novel, Virago. New episodes drop each Monday and all chapters will be available at the end of the book. Virago is intended for a mature audience and today's episode contains discussion of violence, plague, and mass murder. If you missed last week's episode, it is available from the same podcast source. Now, please, sit back and escape into storytelling with me in today's episode. Chapter 25, Family Histories.
Let's see. Tomorrow we have to finish that tunic for the pottery merchant's son by noon, Gert said half to himself as he ran a huge finger down the lines of his account ledger. The sleeves, are they done yet?
Adelaide nodded, letting out a long, gasping yawn. Shadows outside the shop bled into solid blocks of darkness as night fell. Just out the front door, watch members Winston had sent to walk Gert home were wondering whether Gert would treat them to hot spiced cider again.
Goodness, all these last-minute orders for burning leaves. You'd think people would pay more attention. I mean, it comes every year.
Gert looked up and tutted.
Fiddlesticks. I forgot to wash the tea kettle.
I'll take care of it. Go on, have a safe walk home.
You're a dear. I didn't want to go all the way to the fountain anyway. See you tomorrow.
As he went out, a chilly breeze blew dead leaves across the threshold and rifled through racks of clothes. Then he was outside and the door thudded shut. Some indistinct chatter and the words, hot spiced cider, were audible before the trio's steps and voices faded away down the street. Adelaide set to work putting the shop to rights, and was soon lost in the sounds of her nightly duties. Broom bristles scratched across the floor. Metal rang and scraped as the whetstone passed along blades of the many sets of scissors in the shop, including Gert's giant pair, made specially to fit his huge hands and which looked more like forestry equipment. The whisper of fabric being moved and shifted, ribbons and thread winding around spools and thudding into wooden drawers and storage trays.
I'll go to the Bell for dinner and pick up my laundry. Maybe past the hot cider wagon if it's still there.
She replaced her stool behind the counter, then turned back for Gert's.
Someone is upstairs.
Her frame froze. She concentrated on the pulse beating 10 feet overhead.
A steady, calm heartbeat. He's no frightened thief or excited rapist. He's as calm as a cup of water. Standing in the middle of the room, but no creaking floorboards under his feet on the way there. He's good at keeping quiet. Probably came up the trellis.
As she moved across the shop's floor, a beam of moonlight turned her eyes to shimmering silver coins. She kept to the sides of the stairs where the planks were strongest and never creaked. Nearly a year since leaving the wilderness behind, reading the geometry of predator and prey came as second nature as she reached the top floor.
His back is to me.
While studying the angles of possible attack, a familiar scent struck her, as forcibly as in the room of rotting books and dead roses.
Father?
The figure stood by her bed, lit with thin starlight. His clothes, not the ones he normally wore, were nondescript linens and wools, worn but not ragged. Shabby old boots encased the feet, and a dirty cap crowned the head. He was not tall, yet the room bent around him. He held one of the notes scrawled with her early writing attempts, which she had left strewn across her patched quilt. Although she made no noise, he glanced back.
Him, the spymaster, master of hunt. He's in disguise.
A single eye the color of late winter ice found her. His other eye was covered by a smudged bandage, and his face was dirty. Many things were suddenly apparent to her. They were of the same kind, whatever kind that was, as she could smell the bestial scent coming from his pores, that he knew exactly who she was and had for some time. And worst of all, that she was entirely at his mercy in nearly every way possible. The man inclined his head.
You know who I am.
Lord Victor Woodburn.
She curtsied, her skirt pooling at her feet, and continued.
Master of Hunt, spymaster to the Duchess, Lord Commander of the Watch.
The head nodded at her courtesy.
And you are Adelaide, the tailor's assistant, born in the High Country but recently come to Glendale.
He laid the paper down on the bed.
And something more, I think.
She blinked. A creaking voice from her past spoke up.
You might be related, but you've not had the best luck with family. Don't give yourself away by the handful. He peels people apart for their secrets every day. Make him work for yours,
her long-dead gran cautioned.
My lord?
One corner of his mouth lifted in a sharp smile.
I see your father taught you caution.
My father taught me how to survive in the wild. I learned caution myself here in the city.
Fair enough.
He glanced at the windows, at the stairway behind her, as if assuring himself they were alone.
I know a handful of facts. You were born in a high country village to my brother, Vincent, and some willing woman. 3 years ago, my brother came for you, and you lived in ruins, south of the Yellow Crest Mountains, until you met up with some travelers. You went to U, and then came here, where you found room and work in a boarding house. You have been learning to read, and make regular visits to the academy. And now you live and work here.
He motioned to the room around them.
Your employer is satisfied with your work and trusts you completely, although he pays you well below what you're worth because you have no proof of citizenship due to your rural upbringing. You began a romantic relationship with Lieutenant Luthus Meraz of the East Coast Watch a few months ago.
That is accurate.
Probably knows the names of all my friends, where I eat most often, how often I see Luthus, how much money I've saved.
Her throat went dry at the thought of her life dissected and spread apart for curiosity's sake by someone she'd never met.
Between these facts are questions that I want answered.
That's why he's here. He wants something. Asking us to his house was to get a look up close, maybe see how I'd react. He had to be sure before he approached me.
If I can, I will.
Swallowing didn't help. Her mouth might as well have been an old flour sack. Lord Woodburn nodded.
The graves in the ruins. Why did you bury the gods?
For an absurd moment, she was afraid the entire city had heard him, that by answering his question, her past would be known to everyone. They would all know about the ravening pack of monsters that destroyed her village, and how she trapped, killed, or drove them off.
I gain nothing by pretending I don't know what he's talking about. If he knows about the gaunts, he knows about everything else too, most likely.
How did you know it was me, my lord?
My brother would not have done so. He was never one for cleaning up messes.
The gray eye blinked.
Tell me why.
He sounded like father just then. They sound alike when they're annoyed, or ordering me about.
Because I wanted to. I hated the sight and smell of them. They killed my family and most of my people back at the village. I wanted them out of my forest, out of the world.
My lord. Wind rattled the bare honeysuckle vines outside. Lord Woodburn nodded, as if the answer satisfied him.
Vincent would have left them to rot had he even bestirred himself about them. And that answers my other question about the village and what happened there. Gaunts and their ways are known to me.
Her hand wanted to fiddle with something, a button or a loose thread at her sleeve cuff. She made it be still.
Forgive me for the ruse at Woodburn House. I wanted to see what you would do if you would immediately gossip among friends about it. The tailor spoke more of it than you did, and he to very few.
He isn't used to asking for forgiveness. It was practically a command.
What do you wish to speak about, my lord?
The gray eye considered her, giving away nothing. The eye patch had more personality.
Why did you come to the city?
A friend offered me the chance, so I did. I wanted to see for myself after hearing about it. Because the people my friend traveled with were so different from anyone I had ever known. I wanted to see if there were more people like them. And see what else the world offered. Answers, I suppose. About myself and my family. My lord.
The eye blinked.
Family.
My lord. Uncle?
Never call me that, even if we are alone together. No one can know. You would never be safe.
Ah, this feels familiar too. What would family be without secrets?
She sighed and nodded.
I must insist you do not change within the city again. Someone knows my secret and swore me not to do so. I will not swear you do the same, but if I hear once more of a giant black wolf running loose, I will confine you to protect myself and you. Do you understand?
Yes, my lord.
Good. With that, I leave you.
He headed for the stairs.
My lord, was that really all?
That is all I wish to know.
What about what I wish to know?
He paused at the stairs' top. Images of torture chambers danced through her head, or at least a whipping for impertinence. She backed toward her bed, one hand absently reaching for the post.
Ask if I can answer. I will.
Where to begin?
A flood of questions rose to mind. After a moment, she was able to pick one out.
How did my father come to leave the city? People here seem to think he's dead.
He's never told you.
No, my lord. He wouldn't speak of the past, or anything he didn't feel like speaking on.
That sounds like him. Very well. You may as well know the truth. He left 20 years ago. Ran away in the night and left me to make his excuses as ever. A plague ship was coming to Glendale. Sweating sickness was in Braedotia, so the Empire packed a ship full of victims and put it to sea. By the time it reached Hoth, half the people on board were dead. The Hwathi chased it away, back out to sea, and it turned to Glendale.
He glanced at her.
Do you know of the Sweat?
No, my lord.
It does not always kill right away. Most who catch it die within a day, but some don't. Some seem to make a full recovery, only to die days or weeks later. By then, they've spread it to others and there comes another outbreak. It lies dormant, you see. When last the Sweat came to Glendale 50 years ago, half the city died. Half. Over 100,000 people gone in a space of weeks. In those days, Vincent secretly helped me with my work. He remained beloved of the people, a hero in their plays and hearts. That was just as well. It made it easier to disarm our enemies. At any rate, he accepted the mission from the Duchess without my knowledge. We were to set out on a small fishing bark and prevent the plague ship from reaching port. By any means necessary. He made arrangements with the harbor master to clear that course of the sea so there could be no chance of witnesses.
He leaned against the door frame, staring at the floor as he spoke.
I returned to the castle from another matter to find him finishing his plans. He had arranged for the bark and loaded it with supplies. Food, water, kegs of lamp oil. The food, he had treated it and the water with Vitrilese worm seed. Only a few drops and the victim falls into a deep sleep before the heart stops entirely. The gentlest of poisons. We had used it before. We met the plague ship about a day's sail from shore. sharks circled it, following the trail of dead. There were at least 75 still alive. The sea owl. Men, women, children. There's no way to tell who had completely recovered. You can't look and know.
He folded his arms.
We boarded. I'm sure you already know that our kind do not fall sick, so we did not fear disease. They blessed us when they saw the food and water. They didn't hesitate.
Adelaide sat down on the bed.
We made sure they were dead, all of them. When we arrived on board, there were so many hearts beating, like a hum. By the end, just ours. We poured oil all over the decks, then set it ablaze. An hour later, there was only ash on the waves. Back on land, we told Alistair. It was morning and he received us in his study where no one can hear. He said we had done well. He said Her Grace was pleased, but didn't wish to know the details. As ever, we were already lords then and had the house, but Alistair wanted to reward us for our service. Your father suggested 10,000 golden royals. I was surprised, since Vincent had always considered our knight work to be beneath him, and was a fool when it came to money. Alistair paid without question. I thought Vincent had gotten over his ridiculous reluctance to serve, and that he had finally decided to dedicate himself to something greater than himself. I went to sleep thinking of what we could do with the money. Half imagined ideas of rebuilding the house, investing it and growing the sum, buying a ship and becoming merchants and respected men of business. I dared think we need never shed blood for Glendale again. I woke to find my brother and our money gone. He'd thrown it over the cliff. It landed in Dockside. The chaos became known as the Fish Riot because most of the coins landed on Fish Street.
He just gave it away.
The fool. As cruel and thoughtless as ever.
How's giving money to the needy cruel?
His lip curled.
What do you think happens when a great lot of money lands in the street in the middle of the night? Who do you think gets most of it? Do you think they wait their turn to be sure everyone gets a fair share? Do you think the old, the sick, or the hungry young saw any of that money? No. He wanted to make a scene. He wanted a grand, heroic gesture. He could have donated that money to the academy, to the orphanages, or put it back into the city. Instead, he did the easy thing, the selfish thing, and then fled in the night.
A memory reared up of a day in her village when Garth the huntsman threw food to the crowd. The villagers had jumped and screamed to draw his eye, and someone had pushed her aside in their haste to catch something. Only the fast and strong benefited from Garth's generosity that day.
And wasn't that what Father did? Didn't Gran say Garth was trying to win their love as Father had, by standing where he stood and doing the same thing?
I went to Alistair right away. He was livid. Not about the money, but rather that one of his trusted spies disappeared with a head full of secrets. Doubt fell on me. I knew it would. There were accusations that I'd helped Vincent flee, that I would abandon the city and rejoin him later. Lord Thaxton, the former Lord Commander of the Watch, thought I'd killed Vincent over the money. Eventually, I was able to make them see I had nothing to do with it, that I was as bewildered as they were. I insisted I only wanted to serve the Duchess in the city. They believed me, barely. I swore to serve until my dying day, to give my life in service to her will, whatever she might ask. Later, in secret, the Duchess made me vow to never, ever change within the city walls. If word came to her that I had, my life would be forfeit immediately.
But why?
For one thing, she could not offer me protection. If the people knew she employed a monster, they would turn on her. The Empire used magics and witchcraft to dominate Vitrell for hundreds of years and control the people. She must never be seen to use it too.
I see.
So?
He gathered his cloak around himself.
Now you know one of the many ways in which your father disappointed me. Does it surprise you?
No. After he left us, Mother and I, he forgot we existed. He told me as much.
This brought forth an eyebrow twitch from Victor.
I suppose that's how he shows emotion. Someone else might have thrown a table over in rage.
Will I have to serve?
He gave her a thoughtful look before he answered.
I do not know. The Duchess is fading. Her rule cannot last much longer. Only she knows of our secret. But the table knows of you. They know Vincent's daughter lives in East Coast and works as a tailor's apprentice.
The fact that the city's main organizers knew her name and location felt odd. Adelaide imagined a group of well-dressed people clustered on a balcony at the top of the Duchess's tower, all peering her way through telescopes.
They know who I am?
As far as they are concerned, you are merely a grown-up wild oat, sown during Vincent's wanderings and now come to the city to make your way.
Honestly, that's not wrong.
No, merely incomplete. Incidentally, I've told them he's dead, your father. They think he died in the High Country. I don't imagine he intends to return to either the city or even a man's shape. Let him stay in the woods on all fours the rest of his days. Whatever shape he wears, he is dead to them. And to me.
Before we parted, he said we would find each other again.
Perhaps, but I doubt it. He will find you if he has a use for you. But do not expect more than that.
Tears threatened to well up, but she bit her tongue and turned her face away. Lord Woodburn tilted his head, considering her.
If you wish, I could name you my secret heir. None but His Grace would know. Any fool could see you're Vincent's daughter, but there's no legal proof. Legally, you would be a Woodburn, and a full citizen of Vitrall. All of my things and the house, such as they are, would become yours.
That is very kind, my lord. Thank you.
I will not forbid you from changing in the city if the need is great. But I will say this, you would be a fool to do it again. Let the madmen and drug fiends rant about monsters. Let that be the last time. Otherwise, you put yourself and me at risk. I have no desire to confine you, but if I hear rumors again of a giant black wolf, I will. Do you understand what I am saying?
No survivors.
She nodded.
By now you should know how to defend yourself without changing anyway. If not, I can teach you.
I do, my lord, but I appreciate your offer. Anything you could teach me, I would be happy to learn.
He nodded.
I will bid you good evening. You will not speak of our meeting to anyone.
He turned to the stairs.
Please, my lord. I'm pushing too far, but I have to know. Do you know anything about us?
Us?
What? What we are? I hope to find answers here in the city. I learned to read just so I could search the library. So far, I've found nothing useful. Old tales of fairies and monsters. Nothing more.
You refer to our ability? I have never thought to question it. It was enough to have it. But if I could find some of these answers, would you wish to know?
Yes, please, more than anything.
Very well. You will hear from me.
He left as silently as he had gone. This concludes Chapter 25 of Virago. Stay tuned for the next episode, Chapter 26, in which the city celebrates the new year, Gordon wonders about the future, and Adelaide lets go of the past. If you want to read along, Virago will be available in abridged print or ebook format from Amazon later this year. If you enjoyed this work, please remember to like, share, and subscribe so you never miss an episode of Escape into Storytelling. Thank you for supporting independent and self-published authors like me. Until next time, be seeing you.